options. Cough test Tishrei, Monday the 8th of October. Fritz Vermalt Vent and Hiddur Mitzvah. Vent. Holland, it's Vent. Oh, we're going to combine. Sometimes interact with each other.
Sorry, wait.
I have till 9:02 now, right?
Okay. Wait a second.
Say a joke while you wait. It won't be online.
Everything waits for technology.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Good morning.
Morning.
Before I begin, I would like to thank the indefatigable Dudi Itzkowitz for his dedicated Mesiras Nefesh. He literally emailed me about 3.5 months ago, trying to find out when I'm coming for Sukkis. It's a big avoid that I have to find somebody every day. So it's Chuzal Beistein. I was queried as to what is Fritz, what is Vormelt, where did he go, was it a person, new type of cookie? So on the 18th of May, 1903, there was a fellow born whose name was Fritz Vormelt Vent. He was a Dutch botanist. He died on the 1st of May, 1990. And he was well known for his experiment in the year 1928, when he demonstrated the existence of auxin in plants. So we need a little bit of a background. When you go today to M&S and you buy yourself a perfectly ripe yellow nectarine, this is not the nectarine that our Eltezaidas ate in Poland. Norvas, with the advent of genetic engineering, we have figured out how to mutate and to perfect the genes of the nectarine and make it the best nectarine possible. That's why today in modern civilization, it is hard to come by a watermelon that has pips, that has seeds in it anymore, because the scientists have figured out a way to remove the pips. So whereas originally it would be a laborious process to eat your watermelon and spit out all the seeds, nowadays you can go straight to the rind in a matter of seconds. So Mr. Fritz was the father of showing the existence of auxins in plants and fruit life, and he is considered the pioneer in breakthrough that allow us to mutate the genetic makeup of fruits and plants, which in turn allow us to have the perfect fruit and vegetable. What does he have to do with Hiddur Mitzvah? So we know that nowadays, on the Yontif of Sukkot, we take an Esrog. The Esrog is the quintessential mitzvah that has Hiddur Mitzvah. The Gemara tells us, Hiddur Mitzvah Ashlish, that halacha is codified regarding the mitzvah of Esrog. It's interesting to note that the Rambam in all of Sefer Yad does not bring Hiddur Mitzvah as its own halacha. The Acharonim question this, what is the reason to that? Someone suggests, because the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuflet, Amad Gimel, Amad Beis, brings down two shittas as to the pshat in the pasuk Zekhi Livan Veyu. The first mandamer says Zekhi Livan Veyu is hisnah l'fan of the mitzvahs, to have a hiddur mitzvah. And Abishol argues and says that Zekhi Livan Veyu means mahu rachum v'chanon, af ata rachum v'chanon. Perhaps the Rambam holds like Abishol and doesn't hold of hiddur mitzvah. The problem is that the Rambam in Hilchos Deis says that mahu rachum Afata Rachum, and the Kesef Mishnah tells us that the source for this Rambam is the Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Lamed Gimel. So it would seem to be a mashmoyis that the Rambam really holds like the second man Domer. The problem is that that Gemara finds itself in Soita as well. The Gemara darshins the Halachta Bidroch of Mahur Achum Afata Rachum, and the Rambam in the Halacha beforehand in Hilchos Deis and says the Halachta Bidroch of Mahur Achum Afata Rachum. So it would seem to suggest that the Rambam is coming from the Gemara in Soita, not from the Gemara in Shabbos. But generally, it would be problematic to say that the Rambam does not hold of the first Shita one finds in the Sifrei Machshava, in the Maral and Chassidish Svarim, that Abishol does not argue on the first man d'amar, they're not contradictory. It's two pshatim that go hand in hand of Hidr Mitzvah, Hisnolof, of the Mitzvahs, and Mahur Acham. So when most of you in the room were growing up, it was quite a chiddush to have an esrog with a pitim on it. Now you're looking at me that Sukkis is past, we're going into an Ibriar, we have a while till we worry about that. We know that the Gemara in Brachos tells us three different shittas what the Eitz Hadas was. We discussed that here before. The Gemara tells us three shittas. Either it was Chita, it was Gefen, or it was Te'ena. The Ben Ish Chai in Parshas Bereishis, Shana Bey, says that the Eitz Hadas was a miraculous tree that combined all the aspects of these trees. And he says that Chagos, which is known as Chesed, Gevura, Tiferes, which is the building block of the world, is Rosh Hashanah, Chita is Chesed, Gefen is Gevura, and Te'ena is Tiferes. The Medrash Rabbah quotes a fourth Shita, I believe it's Rabbi Yirmiya de Min'aku, in which he says that the Esrig was the Eitz Hadas, a fourth Shita that doesn't find itself in Talmudic literature. Why that is a good question. In Christian theology, we discussed also in previous opportunities, they've held for a long period of time that it was an apple, and that was the forbidden fruit, and hence the protrusion that we have in our throat, which is known as the Adam's apple, was the apple that Adam ate from the forbidden fruit. It got stuck in his throat, and we are perpetually stuck with it in our throat. However, already Michelangelo, in painting of the ceiling in the Sistine Chapel, already painted the Eitz Hadas as a fig tree. He obviously had learned the Gemara in Brachos with one of those shittas. We can't blame the Christians that much for their mistake, because we do find that there were apples in Shir Hashirim. We have the Reach Tapuchim. We do have a smell of apples that Klal Yisrael is compared to. That's the least of their issues. Now, in 1961, the United States of America was drawn into a catastrophic war in Vietnam that schlepped out for a decade, and millions of lives were lost. The United States, which prided itself in having the most advanced warfare, was stuck in the fact that the Vietnamese soldiers were hiding in the foliage of Vietnam, and modern warfare was not cut out to deal with these soldiers that were hiding. Not only they have that, they would hide in the trees, and they would stay there for weeks, months on end, and they would be eating the shrubbery, the various insects and vegetables, and they were living there. They did not have to move for weeks at a time. So the United States decided to employ what was called Agent Orange. Agent Orange was discovered actually by the British in World War II times, and it's a herbicide, it's a defoliant chemical that when you spray it on plants and fruits, it causes the plant to die. And the United States dropped an estimated 20 million U.S. gallons of Agent Orange over the shrubbery, the foliage in Vietnam. It caused the plant life to die. The American warplanes flying above now had clear sight and vision of the Vietnamese soldiers. The food that they were sustaining themselves with died, and the war came to a close. Unfortunately, there were many genetic deformations that were then found in the Vietnamese people afterwards, and court cases were going on. The United States is still paying reparations to Vietnamese civilians for the use of this chemical, which was then banned by the United Nations because it has these horrible side effects. Vayehi Hayom, shortly after the United States dumped all these gallons of Agent Orange on Vietnam, a local orange orchard started growing beautiful oranges. But these oranges were different than any oranges we had seen before, because these oranges all had pitums on them. And apparently, a side effect of Agent Orange was that a pitum would grow on any citrus fruit that was exposed to various levels of Agent Orange. And there's a professor in the Hebrew University, his name is Eliezer Goldschmidt, who he spent his life working on the makeup of Esrogim. And he and other professors basically tweaked Agent Orange and discovered a chemical, a formula, that when sprayed on Esrogim, a citrus first cousin to the orange, allows the pitum to remain on the esrog. And that's why, 25 years ago, it was a Yikar HaMetzias to find an esrog, most definitely a Chazanish esrog, with a pitum on it. Nowadays, it's not a misnomer to find a Temani esrog with a pitum on it. How is that possible? The answer is because in the early stages of the development of the esrog, they spray it with a Haimish version of Agent Orange, and that allows the pitum to stay on. So Fritz Wormald-Wendt, who pioneered the genetic mutations of auxins found in plants, has a very large part in our mitzvah of esrog. So the story goes as follows. Reb Chaim Brisker was sitting in his study together with the local Lamdanim in Brisk, and in case you want to find the whereabouts of this story, it's in the New Chidushei HaGrach HaLashas in Nispachim. There's a letter from Rabbi Yehuda Leib Don Yichya, who is the son-in-law of the Cheshek Shleimo, who is a Rav in Vilna, in which he writes a letter to Rabbi Zevin of Yerushalayim. The date is Chaf Dala Tishrei Tafresh Tzadik Tes Tel Aviv. So Tafresh Tzadik Tes, Chaf Dala Tishrei, not that long ago. And he's writing to Reb Zevin about the galus of his Rebbe Chaim Brisker and how he changed the face of the yeshiva, the world of learning in the yeshiva world. And he relates the following story, that he was sitting before Sukkot by Reb Chaim, and a fellow came in and said, "What are we discussing?" He said, "We're discussing Esrogim, what's a hiddur mitzvah by an Esrog." And the fellow said, "Why don't you take a Yan of the Esrog?" One of the Litvaks sitting there said, "A Yan of the Esrog? Ach, see the Shemaisis. We're Litvaks over here. What are you bringing me a Yan of the Esrogim for?" Yan of the Esrogim were well known in the Chassidish world till this day. Yan of his Genoa, which is Italy. And Reb Chaim said that I'm not aware about the Yan of Esrog and what's so chashiv about them. So the fellow said, "What would you tell me if I told you that in Shuvas Chassam Sefer, the Chassam Sefer writes that Yan of Esrogim have a yichus mi chachmei hatzafartim sheba Ashkenaz, the Baal Yatoisis in Ashkenaz, that these Esrogim are considered miyuchus, that they are not morkov, they are not grafted." Now we have to explain a little bit what's going on over here with the grafting of esrogim. If any of you have ever been at an esrog orchard before, an esrog tree is a very weak and fragile tree. It almost is like a shoot that is held up and supported by metal rods and strings that tie to the esrog tree to support it. And that's why we pay a premium for esrogim, because it needs tender love and care throughout the year. So with the advent of grafting, people said, "Hold on. We have a lemon tree, which is quite a strong citrus tree. Why don't we graft the lemon tree together with the esrog tree? And it won't at all affect the beauty and look of an esrog because it is a first cousin." And this is a matter of major dispute. Already in the Tshuvas HaBach, we find that he discussed the halacha of harkava by esrog. About 100 years ago, the Chacham Alefandri, who was the Rabbi Rashi of Yerushalayim, of the Svardim, he passed in halacha l'maisa that one can go lechatchila and graft esrogim. And therefore, many of the esrogim farmers that lived in Eretz Yisrael, who were of Svardish lineage, said that their Rav won lechatchila and passed in that they can go and graft esrogim with the lemon trees. And that's why, when the Chazanish came to Eretz Yisrael, he had this whole mapecha turnover about esrogim, because he was worried about the existence of the grafted esrogim. And that is why, if you look till this day on any box of esrogim that you will find, most of them say bechezkas bilti morkavim, or leloy cheshash harkava. You will not find an esrog till this very day that will say on it vadai einai morkav, because nobody knows in certainty that their esrog is not grafted. And there's basically two strains of Chazanish esrog. There's the famous Lefkovich esrog, and there's also a Halperin. the Lefkovich Esrog was seeds that were given by the Chazon Ish to Rav Milcha Yehuda Lefkovich, who planted them in his front garden. And I myself asked Rav Milcha Yehuda, what is with the tree in your front garden? And he told me that the Chazon Ish gave him seeds and told him that these seeds do not have a problem of harkava. He should go and plant these in his front garden in Bnei Brak, which was literally 1 or 2 meters by 2 meters. And whoever wants to come and start their own esrog orchard should come to Rav Milcha Yehuda, and he gave them seeds, and there was a proliferation of what's known as Lefkovich Chazon Ish Esrogim. Miraculously, the year that Rav Milcha Yehuda was nifter, the esrog tree that was in his front yard, that was standing there for many decades, shriveled up and died, and that tree is no longer. So any Lefkovich Esrogim that we have now are toldos and toldoseyan of the original Lefkovich esrog. There's another famous Chazon Ish esrog, which is known as the Halperin, which was one of the builders of Zichron Meir in Bnei Brak, went with the Chazon Ish, and they were looking for a wild orchard, and they found an esrog tree growing in an Arab village. There's a little bit of machlokes as exactly which village it was. Was it in Shechem or Malpachem? And based on the simonim that the Chazon Ish found by the tree, he dug up around the roots of the tree to see if any grafting was done to it, and he said that these have the simonim of being purebred esrogim. So that's where the whole balagan comes with the esrogim. So going back to Chaim Briske. So the fellow said, what would you tell me if I told you that in Tshuvas Chasam Sefer, in Aruch Chaim, Simin Reish Zayin, the Chasam Sefer says that Yanav Esrogim are Meyuchas. So Reb Chaim said, okay, bring the Tshuvas Chasam Sefer. They brought a Chasam Sefer, they opened it up, and the Chasam Sefer Taka says that. Listen to the Gaonus of Reb Chaim Briske. He said, okay, I would like to order a Yanav Esrog. So here Reb Chaim Briske, who had his Mesorah, and yet he was willing to learn. The Chasam Sefer says that Yanav Esrog is Meyuchas. He was willing to learn. So he ordered one, and there were no Yanav Esrogim growing in Brisk. It was a distance, the fellow had to ship it, and it came to Reb Chaim a couple days before Sukkot, a box with an esrog, and it was marked on the top of the box, 15 ruble. Reb Chaim opened the esrog, and he said, this esrog is not worth 15 ruble. And he said he didn't want to rely on his own opinion, because he's biased, and he showed it to the local Esrogim Meichrim in Brisk, and he got the valuation between 5 to 8 ruble was the value of this esrog. So he gave it back to the fellow who had requested from his father to procure an esrog for Reb Chaim and said, this esrog is not worth 15 ruble. Another chiddush you learned from the story of Reb Chaim was that you would think, Reb Chaim, listen, it's a dvar mitzvah, you know, you should pay for it. But the Gemara tells us that tzadikim, memoinen chashuvim len yoyse migufan, and in Brisk they're very much into treifa gelt, that all the money that you have has to be pure. And Reb Chaim said that if this esrog is only worth 5 to 8 shekel, he was not prepared to spend more for it. So Reb Chaim gave it back to the fellow. Erev Sukkot, Reb Chaim calls the fellow back and says, did you sell the esrog to somebody else for 15 ruble? And the fellow said, no, obviously he didn't, because he saved it for Reb Chaim. So Reb Chaim said, listen, I will pay you now 8 ruble for it, which was the highest valuation that this esrog got. And after Yontif, we'll send a telegram to your father, who had sent the Yanav esrog, to ask him what exactly is going on with this esrog. A fascinating story. Reb Chaim took the esrog, and after Yontif, they sent the telegram, and the fellow wrote back that the real value of this esrog was 8 ruble. But he was sending it with a messenger, and he was worried that the esrog would get bounced around in the fellow's valise, and he wouldn't be so careful with it. So he wrote on the box 15 ruble, so that the messenger should think it's a precious commodity, an esrog that was 15 ruble, and therefore he'll be very careful with it. So you see that the tzaddikim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, leads them in the right path. So the real value was 8 ruble, exactly what Reb Chaim paid for it. It comes Sukkis, and Reb Chaim has this Yanav Esrog, which according to the Chasam Sofer and Tshuvas is a Meyuchas, but it was not the nicest Esrog. Reb Chaim had in front of him another Esrog, which was beautiful. So Reb Chaim asked the Talmidim, which Esrog should we shake first? We're going to make a bracha al netilas lulav. So the Talmidim said, take the one that's a Meyuchas. Take the Yanav Esrog. You know why? Because you're going to make the bracha. If you're going to shake the one that's Mahudr, that's beautiful, but you have your doubts that maybe it's grafted and it's not really an Esrog, so then you're going to have a hefsek between your bracha and shaking a lemon. And you're going to tell me that you'll then go afterwards and shake it. You're going to have a hefsek between the bracha and the Maisa Mitzvah. So therefore the Talmidim said, make the bracha, shake the one that is miyuchas, so you know for sure you're mekayim the mitzvah, and afterwards you'll take the mahudr, and you'll be mekayim hid the mitzvah of zakeh liban ve'yo. And Reb Chaim said, no, we can't do that. Chaim said that when you do a Maisa Mitzvah, with a hiddur mitzvah, the hiddur mitzvah is part and parcel of the Maisa Mitzvah. You can't do a mitzvah and then do a hiddur afterwards. In other words, hiddur mitzvah is a way of glorifying and beautifying Hashem's mitzvahs. When you do the mitzvah, that's when the beautification has to take place. But once you've already been mekayim the mitzvah, you cannot then go and do a ma'isa mitzvah. And the truth is that this is not Reb Chaim's own chiddush. This chiddush already finds itself in the works of his father, the Beis Halevi, in Shuvas Chelik Beis, Siman Mem Zayin. The Beis Halevi quotes a halacha of a Gemara in Shabbos that discusses tzitzin hama'akvin es hamila. If somebody does a ma'isa mila, and there are strands of the foreskin that are still left over, so if those tzitzin are ma'akev es hamila, that this child is considered an aral, he's not considered circumcised, the halacha is, even on Shabbos, the moel goes back and he cuts those strands of skin. Zok the Gemara, but what about tzitzin she'enon ma'akev es hamila? There are strands that do not affect the kashrus of the mila. The child is considered circumcised, but it's not mohoder. It's not a beautiful ma'isa bris mila. The Gemara says, Impirish enei chayzer. If the mayel has stopped doing the bris mila, he doesn't go back. Most of the Rishonim learn pshat on this Gemara, that it means to say that if it's Shabbos and the mayel has already put down his knife, he's turned to the side and he's called out the next kibud, then you don't go back because it's Shabbos and this child is considered mahol, and on Shabbos to go and do a new ma'isa chitach would be over a tolda of shchita be Shabbos. Comes along the Rambam in Mila in Parak Beis and he says that no, the second half of the Gemara is talking about during the week. Frektor, the Beis Halevi, what's going on? If it's a Monday morning, why shouldn't the Moyel go back and cut the tzitzin she'em akvin es hamila to do hiddur mitzvah? I once heard that if Goyim would know the hana that Yidden have when they come into a shul on a Monday morning and there's a bris mila and there's no tachnun, they would all be Megayah. So, Frekt Beis Halevi, what's Pshan the Rambam? Why, if it's Chol, should they not go back? Zok the Beis Halevi, because the Rambam holds of the Yesod that we just mentioned, that Hiddur Mitzvah has to be done in the Kiyum Mitzvah, which means to say, if the Moyel has finished cutting, turned to the side, put down his knife, and it's a Monday morning, you should not go back and cut the Tzitzit She'im Akvin. Zok the Beis Halevi, you know why? Because what you're doing is worthless. You've already finished the Ma'isa Mitzvah. The Hiddur Mitzvah is now not attached to the Ma'isa Mila, and therefore there's no inyan to go back. This is the Beis Halevi's pshat in the Rambam. The Tor and the other Rishonim, who all argue on the Rambam, they hold that you should go back during the week, and perhaps they hold like the other tzad, that maybe you could do Hiddur without. But the Beis Halevi says that's not true. That's not the Nekudas HaMachlokes, and perhaps we'll get to that. That is the earliest source in Brisker literature where you find this. The truth is that the Shagas Aryeh already says this, he said, that Hiddur Mitzvah has to be done B'Shas Kiyum Mitzvah. And to complete the trifecta in Brisk, we'll go to the son of Reb Chaim, the Brisker of, in Hilchas Chanukah, where he uses this Yisoid of his father and grandfather, Renegeya Hilchas Chanukah, in a Rambam over there, to explain why the Rambam argues on the Ramah that holds that the mitzvah of Mahajan, Min Mahajan, by Ner Chanukah, is that the Balabayas should light 80 candles if there are 10 members of his family on the 8th night of Chanukah, as opposed to what we do, that each person lights their own. And the Brisker Rav explains, based on this Yisoid, that if the Avi Habayis, if the father of the household will go and light his menorah for the other members of the household to go and light their menorah, that will be hiddur mitzvah after a kiyum mitzvah, which there's no place for according to the Rambam. Masha in kain, if he lights all of them in succession, then he will be doing the hiddur mitzvah b'shas the kiyum mitzvah, comparable to the Beis Halevi's bris mila, which if the moil was not pirish, if he's still holding by the ma'isa mila, he can still continue and do the hiddur. So, we have the Brisker trifecta of the Beis Halevi, Reb Chaim, and the Brisker Rav that all hold of this Yisoid of Hiddur Mitzvah B'Shas Kiyum Mitzvah. The problem is that the Hisayrish Tshuva quotes his father, the Ksav Sefer, and his grandfather, the Heilig Chassam Sefer, that their minig was throughout the day of Sukkot, they would shake Esrogim that were more Mahudr than the Esrog that they had shaken earlier in the morning, in order to Mekayim Hiddur Mitzvah. So, who's going to be Machriya between the Chut HaMashulash of the Heilige Peshborgi Yidin and the Chut HaMashulash of the Briski Yidin, where we have son, father, grandfather, that all say a Yisoid. We have Machaikis between the Chassam Sefer, Ksav Sefer, Zayrish Tshuva, and Beis Halevi, Reb Chaim, and the Briski Rav. So Muskel Rishon, you could say, that the Chassam Sefer, umishpach, they hold that you could do hider mitzvah even without a kiyum maisa mitzvah. The problem is that the Brisker Rav, when saying this yisoid over, quotes Rabbeinu Chananel, who mamish says the yisoid that hider mitzvah has to be done b'shas kiyum mitzvah. So here we have Rishonim that are saying this yisoid. So it's shver to suggest that the Chassam Sofer is arguing on Rabbeinu Chananel. The problem is as follows. The Briskus L'char have a shtaka raya from Rabbeinu Chananel. And we have a problem over here of a hefsek. So we actually find this somewhere else in Sinan Lamed Aleph in Hilchos Tefillin, when there's a machlokes between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, the Smag says that one could put on a pair of tefillin, make the bracha of Lahaniach tefillin, put on whichever one pair of tefillin he wants to hold, and then afterwards put on the second pair, and even if the first pair is not tefillin, then the bracha will be chal from the bracha onto the second pair of tefillin. So l'chari, you see that this yisoid of a hefsek between the bracha and the ma'isa mitzvah is not really an issue. The problem with saying that is that once it's already been paskin, the ikra halacha that we hold is like Rashi, the achrenim say that you cannot put on Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin before you do Rashi's tefillin and make the bracha beforehand. The halacha is you have to make the bracha, put on Rashi, and then afterwards put on Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin. So if so, you see that we are concerned with a hefsek between the bracha and the ma'isa mitzvah. So I want to suggest the following. There's a question, why is it on Rosh Hashanah, after we've already blown 30 koilis, and we continue to blow another 70 koilis, is it not a problem of Baal Tosif? L'chari, you've already been Mekayim the Maisa Mitzvah, and now you're continuing, you're doing more. Shtil Shmarne Asrei, not Shtil Shmarne Asrei, but these 70 koilis, l'chari, are superfluous. You're over in Baal Tosif. So the truth is that Tosif asks this kasha in three places in Shas. The Minchas Chinuch in Mitzvah Tuf Nun Dalet discusses it at length. And the basic yisoid of Tosis is that if you're doing the identical action over and over again, that's not an issue of Baal Tosif. So you've blown a koil, you've blown the same koil again, that's not Baal Tosif. The Levush argues on this yisoid of Tosifis, and he says that we find by Shaifa, the Torah says, Yoim Trua Yielachem, a day of blowing. And it does not limit the blowing to a specific amount. There's no quantity to the amount of blowing. You can blow the whole day, Zot the Levush. And therefore there's no Baal Tosif. When it comes to lulav and esrig, the Torah says, It says, you should take for yourself on the first day of Sukkot. It doesn't say how many times. You could do it the entire day. So perhaps we can suggest the following. That the Chassam Sofer holds that the mitzvah of Dalet Minim, its zman is the entire day. So much so that if you shook an esrig at 7 o'clock in the morning, you cannot say that you have a gemar mitzvah that you can no longer do a hinder afterwards. Because the gemar mitzvah goes until night. And the truth is that this finds itself in other halachic literature as well. There's a shiloh, which is the machlokes between the Aruch Laner and the Shvus Yaakov. If a fellow is standing by halal, he's about to make his bracha, and he has an esrig she'enoy mehoder. It's kosher, but it's not mehoder. But he knows that in an hour, his brother-in-law will finish davening, and then he'll have an esrig mehoder. What should he do? Should he shake the esrig she'enay mehoder at 7 in the morning, and then shake the esrig mehoder at 8 o'clock, and zrizin magdimin l'mitzvahs, or should he wait to make his bracha on the 8 o'clock? And this is a machlokes between the Aruch Laner and the Shvus Yaakov. L'chayra, the tut stadim is tali on this chakira. If you'll tell me that hider mitzvah has to be done b'shas l'kiyum mitzvah, then there's no room to wait to say, shake the first one at 7, and do the mehoder at 8. No, because once you've done the kosher at 7, you can't then go and do the hider afterwards. But according to what we're suggesting right now, it's not going to be so shver, because it's not considered a gemar mitzvah until the end of the day. Now, someone to bring a raya from the famous gemara, the Anshei Yerushalayim would be oiches as lulavayim kol hayom. They would hold the lulav the entire day. So l'chayra, you see from there that it's a mitzvah that goes throughout the entire day. And the truth is that Tosfos Boizais from this Gemara, halacha l'maisa, that if you forgot to make a bracha before you picked up the lulav, that we know that brichas ha-mitzvahs has to be done over lasi yasan, zok taisvis, you can make the bracha afterwards because of the Anshei Yerushalayim. So l'chayra, you would see from here that it's considered that it's a mitzvah, nimsheches, that's going the entire time. So going back to Reb Chaim told the Talmidim that we're going to have two Esrogim in front of us. We have to first take the Esrog Mohodar, because if we take the Miyuchas first, we'll have already finished our Maisa Mitzvah, and then there's no room afterwards to go and do a Hiddur. Mash Enkein, the Chassam Sefer, the Kava say that they shook many Esrogim throughout the day to be Mekayim the Din of Hiddur. It's not the Pshat that they hold that you can do a Hiddur after a Kiyum. Rather, they hold that this man of Mitzvah's Esrog continues throughout the entire day, and therefore there's makom to do a hiddur with even after you've already taken the esrog miyuchas. We started 2 minutes late because the video wasn't working, so I have another 120 seconds.
You have to make another bracha though when you're doing it throughout the day.
Oh, so the truth is that we paskin that you don't. The Meiri holds, he's one of the Rishonim that holds that every time you take an esrog, you make a new bracha. We don't paskin like that because we hold that once you've done the Maisa Mitzvah, you make one bracha. But there still is room to shake it, the esrog again. We
mitzvah.
Find that it's not a new mitzvah according to the Meiri. You're just invited to doing the same mitzvah. We find in Zmiris, in Shabbos morning, that we say, Harachamani Barchas Ame Vashalom, the Yiskulur is Barnum of Nevanum, Oiskim Matar Vimitzvahs, Ayisol, Shalom, Pele Yaitz, El Gibar, Avi Ad, Sar Shalom. So the Bechatzer Ruv used to touch the Pasuk like this. Avi Ad Sar, you want to know the difference between an Av and a Sar, because we say in Yom Neroyim, Kirachim of Abonim, Im Kavonim, Im Kavodim, which one are we? So if you want to know the Avoida, what to do in order to be an Av and not a Sar, the answer is Shalom, which the last Mishnah in Shas tells us, L'matza Kosh Klimax of Bracha El HaShalom. But what is the Hemshaf that we say at the Zmiris? The Yizkul there is Banim of Nevanim Oiskim Matar B'mitzvahis, Avi Ad Sar Shalom. What does the Shalom have to do with the Yizkul there is Banim? So there's a Chassam Sefer. The Chassam Sefer says that 4 times in Shas, the Gemara tells us this Braisa of Tamid Chacham and Marbim Shalom Ba'olam. It's Lash, it's Benayach. It's Brachas, Nida, Yivamis, and Krisos. So that's Benayach, the builders. How is it that Tamid Chacham and Marbim Shalom Ba'olam? Do you ever see Tamid Chacham standing outside the United Nations trying to work out world peace? So the Chassam Sefer says an unbelievable thing. He says that when Tamid Chachamim sit and learn Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does the following. At the beginning of the year, the Yom Nerem Hashem says, there's X amount of war that has to take place this year. And there'll be millions of lives that are at stake. But when Talmid Chachamim sit and learn Torah, and they have Mulchamta Shal Torah, like the Chassam Sefer, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes that in lieu of the Mulchama. It's like walking into a store to try to pay with Monopoly money. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you're going to have Mulchamta Shal Torah, I'm going to be machshav that Mulchama as Mulchama Sa'ilam, and the Melod is going to be Shalom Ba'ilam. The Sfasemis would say that Lulav is Rosh Tevis V'tahar Libeinu La'avdecha Be'emes. What's the Hemshach? The Pshat is as follows. It comes to the Yom Neroyim, and we say, Im Kivonim, Im Kavodim. We want to make HaKadosh Baruch Hu like the Av, not like the Sar. So when we have the Yizkulir is Banim Uvnei Vanim, Oiskim Batayru Uvim Mitzvahis, if we have the children that are sitting and learning Torah, and they have the Melchamta Shal Torah, then we're going to have the Pele Yoitz El Gibar Avi Atzar, which is Shalom. Because if we're going to have the Melchamta Shal Torah, then we'll have Shalom. So that's the Vitar Libeinu Lav Tchob Emes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we go through the Yom Neroyim, we come out with our Lulav, the victory flag of the difference between the Avi and the Sar. And we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look, we have the Vitar Libeinu, we've undergone the purification process of Yom Kippur, and we already had this Bechina, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu, give us the Lulav. So as we come out with the Hiddur Mitzvah of the Dalet Minim, we should use it to continue that we should all have a Gesunta Winter and the Ivriar, and we should have these Kaichas last us throughout a wonderful, fantastic year. Thank you for listening.